Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And, oh boy, today do we have a good one for you. This is interesting. This is why people have bad breath. This is why people walk around looking messy. This is why, what are people avoiding? This is something that I've discovered, and I've decided to coin a new phrase called the sexual avoidant personality disorder. I put the disorder in because it just sounds like fun to have a disorder in there, but sexually avoidant personality, or SAP, S-A-P. You know any sexually avoidant personality people? Well, these are people who walk around kind of putting out a message that says, not me. Under any circumstances, not me. These are not people who may say, not me for you, mister. Not me for you, lady. These are people who are saying, not me. I avoid it at all costs. I don't even have it in my bones. I don't even know what it feels like. Something happened. Sexually avoidant personality disorders, and I've met a couple of people recently, a couple of men have come to me, who talked about feeling that way. They just said, you know, I just don't feel it. Or men who have come to me and said, I go out and I meet women and they never respond to me. I have an interest in sex somewhat because I could tell because I enjoy watching erotic stuff on TV. I enjoy my sex with myself. But somehow, I never have sex. And this never having sex This never having sex seems to be something that's very important. Okay, so let's look at this. Let's take a little closer look. First, let's look at nature. Are there anything in nature that avoids sex? Get this, guppies. Little guppies. Now, a female guppy is gray. Male guppies, they have color. Female guppies sometimes have no interest in sex. They don't want to have sex. They're not in the mood for sex. They have, in most of nature, a female either is in estrus or not in estrus. If she's in estrus, she's very interested in sex. If she's not in estrus, she has no interest in sex. None. Now, let's say you have no interest in sex, and here along comes some guy who does have an interest in sex. Well, in nature, the males usually respond only to the females who are in estrus. However, some males will mount just about anything, as all of you know. But it doesn't, this is mostly a rule in nature, but the females, you know, the females, how do they deal with it? So female guppies, which remind me of some of my cousins. Female guppies, what they do is they've learned to hide out from the males. But where can a guppy go? Can they go to their mother's house? No, the male guppy's going to knock on the door. Female guppies hide out among predators that would eat guppies. Yes, they'll hang out with a fish who would most likely eat them. But because they're gray and a little bit invisible, they hide away. They're not seen. And it's a good place to hide because if a male tries to knock on that door, he's going to get eaten by the predator. So that's pretty extreme, don't you think? It's pretty smart. It's like, I guess it's like a nunnery. You know, you just go someplace where they're not allowed in. God's going to get you if you knock on this door. Now the female toad has another way of doing it. Female toads, they have this bad experience. Male toads, when they make love with female toads, they bite them in the back of the neck. This thing is kind of good on one level because it kind of makes a person go limp. You know, like when a female lion carries around her cubs. The reason she's carrying them that way is it kind of induces a form of hypnosis, and they kind of go to sleep, and they have no pressure, and a female lion could lift up a cub by the neck. So biting someone on the neck does have the power to disable them, make them less strong, make them feel nice, as they have this expression called necking. Wonder where necking ever came from. It probably came out to the sensitivity of the neck. Anyway, toads, though, they have this dangerous thing, because when a male toad bites a female toad in the neck, he sometimes kills her because of their teeth being so long and their spinal cord and the whole thing. So when the female is an estrus and she wants to get pregnant, she risks losing her life to get pregnant, because the rule of life is you got to have babies. But once they become pregnant, they avoid all male lizards. And the way they do it, they avoid male toads, and the way they do it is they inflate themselves. They make themselves bigger than they are. Now, does that mean that people who gain a lot of weight are avoiding sex? Interesting. We'll get back to that in a little bit. Okay. Is making your body bigger than it is a way to avoid sex? Well, it does make sex a little more difficult. You know, it does make the angles more difficult, but it doesn't necessarily turn you off. So let's look at, where is my other animal? The lizards. Yes, we didn't get to the lizards. So the female lizard, what she does, the female lizard relies on testosterone for keeping the males around. What she does is she takes the testosterone, she lays on her back, and her chest turns a bright yellow from the testosterone, and it scares off the males. The males run away. So they actually utilize testosterone, which is one of these incredible substances that we have to get control over in order for us to understand our sexuality and our libido. Is it loss of libido? Is a sexually avoidant personality just somebody who doesn't have a libido? Meaning they don't have a sex drive. Or is it somebody who is damaged? Or is it somebody who is physically unhealthy? So we took a look at people, and we tried to see how many people want sex and how many people don't want sex. A lot of men, you know. After studying 4,000 adults, the research revealed that 1 in 5 men regularly make excuses for not having sex. And 7 out of 10 say they were too exhausted. They said. But here's what they found. The excuses. Too tired. I'm not in the mood. I've got a headache. Men use this excuse. I got to get up early in the morning. I'm preoccupied with work. I'm angry with you. I can hear the kids talking. And then comes this other thing, you know, with this way of shielding yourself by smelling bad. I'm going to talk about that, because sex is very dependent on the nose. Yes, smells are so important for sex. If your person doesn't smell good, they're going to turn you off. And smelling good could be, for some people, the smell of sweat. Or smelling good could be smelling clean. You know, there's a smell that women often refer to of, I love a man who smells clean. Men never talk about that. They don't refer to it in one way or another, because usually there's some kind of smell that a woman is wearing. Either it's a powder or something, you know. But smelling clean is a thing that is very important to women. I wonder what clean really means. Does it mean the absence of dirt? Or does it mean the absence of anything that in some way suggests that you're not healthy? And therefore, it attracts me. So smell is so important. Yet, you'll see men who will eat 10 cloves of garlic a day because they heard it was good for them. So you eat 10 cloves of garlic a day, and one thing can be sure, you're not going to be accosted by a vampire. You know, I mean, if there is somebody who is out to just, they're going to stay away from you. I was once down at a farm of people who were eating garlic. This was in Florida. And I remember we were all eating a lot of garlic as a health cure. And I remember these women who went to a dance, and they came back and they said nobody would dance with them. But of course we all knew, because you reeked of garlic, everybody would stay away. So do we have a way of purposely telling people no? Is there a way of telling people yes? Yes. Do you look like you are at least sexually alive? or are you really trying to convince the world that you don't want to have anything to do with this again? This is our question today. Why would it be? Is it normal? Is it the way you want it to be? In August 17th last year, a U.S. survey found 44% of women over age 35 said that they had avoided or made an excuse or stopped having sex because of physical discomfort that came on with perimenopause. And the survey of 1,000 women ages 35 and over, 76% of them said they found themselves avoiding sex. 95% of the women were knowledgeable about hot flashes, and 91% were knowledgeable about night sweats. But a true 50% of the women were not aware of any of the symptoms of menopause, even though they had the symptoms. So they would have hot flashes, and they would think the room was too hot, you see? And they would accuse the room of being too hot. And they would have these other experiences. So there is something in nature that doesn't necessarily point you to an awareness of the fact that you're going through physical changes. But the physical changes that they often go through during menopause are very difficult. It's called a change of life. Now, this is just a short focus on women's sexuality, and this is Armand DeMille with you, talking, just if you tuned in today, about sexually avoidant behavior or sexually avoidant personalities. More the men than the women I want to talk about today. We'll get to that. Menopause is called a change of life. And for some women, it could be very uncomfortable. If you're going to talk about the avoidance of sex, there are emotional changes that vary widely during menopause because of the lower estrogen levels. Some women experience minor moodiness. Others experience irritability and even severe depression. So a lot of this gets in the way. Insomnia. Well, even talk about the hot flashes. Feeling too warm virtually ensures that you're not going to want to curl up next to the warm body of a partner. And you know, that skin contact is such an important thing when you're with your partner, laying close to your partner, really wonderful. But night sweats can be very uncomfortable and awkward, leaving women to push their partners away. Insomnia is common during menopause and can leave a woman irritable and uninterested in sex. Urinary difficulties can develop during menopause, resulting in some loss of control of the bladder, and it's very embarrassing to some women. The walls of the vagina become thinner and less well lubricated, and that may make it more difficult, a lessened interest, because it creates pain. And physical changes include change in skin tone, breast shape, firmness, changes in weight, and therefore your image of your body becomes distorted. You start seeing yourself as less attractive, so you avoid being seen, even by your own partner. So loss of sexual desire is reported by many women during menopause. They lose it. It comes back. Or if it doesn't come back, it comes back in a form when you deal with it. The one thing they find is after you're aware that you're going through a transitional stage, you and your mate can adjust to it, work with it, and find yourselves in beautiful places later in life. If you deny it, if you can't see it, if you don't work with it, if one of the other person gets irritated and they say, I'm out of here, then you have what we call midlife crisis. Because it's real midlife crisis. Midlife crisis is a man saying, I can't stand it. You know, midlife crisis, whatever that is. Some men, they stand in there, some men don't. Another reason that people are given to decrease sexual desire is medication and the treatment that women are given to help them cope with menopause. So all of the medications they take can affect them, but especially Prozac. Now, Prozac, let's talk about the SSRIs. The SSRIs, the things that you people use to treat depression, are about the most purposeful non-sexual drug you could take. Here's the choice you make. I'll take that drug and I'll give up sex. That's generally the decision. Or I'll take that drug and I'll give up desiring sex. Because the feeling you have is like prolactin. It's like a feeling of, I don't have the depression, because the depression certainly will make you feel sexual, will make you feel asexual as well. So I don't have that. And when I come back with a smaller range, because the SSRI specifically attack the estrogen. Men and women have a decreased intensity in orgasm or the ability to orgasm. Estimates vary, but research shows between 20 and 45% of people experience decline in sexual function with antidepressants. So in all the side effects of why you don't take it, it's one to consider. In some men, they create impotence, delayed ejaculation, and they could eliminate orgasms in women in general. And, you know, you take away the good stuff, sometimes you just don't have any interest at all. What could be done? It's mostly the brain, not our bodies, that determines sexual performance and enjoyment. Even with the changes that occur with menopause, sexual curiosity and relaxation go a long way in decreasing sexual problems. So it's really being able to work with your partner that helps you get back to that which you want. But we're going to now talk much more about this as it becomes a bigger problem. While we're at it, let's talk about mice. Since I like what we're talking about so far, we have frogs, guppies, right? Lizards and mice. Mice. They found that if you splice a gene in a part of the brain of mice, that means you don't slice the brain, you slice the gene, right? And now you produce a mouse with this sliced gene. And what this causes is it inhibits estrogen. Now, estrogen, as you know, they call it the female hormone. Estrogen is, you gotta have it. Men and women both, right? Estrogen in mice results in lordosis. What is lordosis? Is it crying up to the heavens, oh, lordosis? No, lordosis is the arching of the spine that a mouse does, and cats do it too, in preparation for mating. They arch. They raise their butts. That's called lordosis. It's called the lordus response. Well, what they found in mice, if they take this little gene and splice it, they find that it inhibits this response. So the mouse is never available for sex. So they take the gene, the mice that had this gene spliced, and they put them in a tank with a horny male. And the male tries to get near him, he can't, they fight him off, they push him away. They have no interest whatsoever. Now you take that mouse and you take another mouse and you give them both estrogen. The one that you gave the estrogen to, they become very interested in sex, but the one who had that gene splice never did. So therefore, is lack of sex interest and lack of projecting yourself as a sexual being, is it genetic? Could it be in the genes? And what kind of genes do you wear anyway? No, and could it be in the genes? Could it be as far back as your history? Think of your mother. You know, think about your grandmother. My grandmother, I don't think my grandmother ever had sex. I don't know where those 8 kids came from. But, you know, she was completely sexless. But don't we all think that way about our grandmothers? You know what I mean? Maybe there's something about age that makes you that way. But there are a lot of people who are in their 60s and 70s who certainly have a live sexual interest, you know? And sexual interest could be anything. It just doesn't have to be penetration, ejaculation, orgasm. It could be anything. It could be just sliding up and down against somebody else's body and holding them closely, or just touching somebody. Sexuality is a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. If you have decided to take it away from yourself, or if something in you has decided to take it away, there must be a reason. They found a small region of the hypothalamus in the mouse, which is thought to be the seat of all female sexual behavior. In the hypothalamus, kind of interesting. Okay, lordosis, remember that word. Lordis. Now, the incest, we have a part of our brain that tells us not to have sex with our brothers and sisters. It makes sense, because talk about genetically, this is how you get trouble. You know, I mean, look at the House of Lords. Look at Great Britain. Look at the queens and the princes and the kings, and they all intermarry. You know, all the cousins marry the cousins, and, you know, if you're likely to talk to one of them, they'd say something like a plumber. What is that? You know, they have this kind of a dull sense about them. And I think that's from the incest breeding. But there seems to be a thing about mixing siblings in a litter. And they have found that animals who grow up together avoid mating. Where animals who did not grow up together don't necessarily avoid mating. They have a thing called the Westermark hypothesis, which was named after a Finnish sociologist who noted this in his book in 1889. He said that children reared together do not end up being sexually attracted to each other. Now, this is very interesting if you think of Shakespeare. Why Shakespeare? Where am I going to go with this for you? Well, Shakespeare talked about 49 dramatic situations. He said there are a number of dramatic situations, and they could be repeated over and over again. And one of them is finding out that your lover is really your brother or sister. Right? Because in Shakespeare's time, people would get separated. And then they would find somehow they're attracted to somebody. And then very often, during those times, people would wind up mating with somebody who eventually wound up being their brother or sister. Well, according to Westermark, he said, nope, that doesn't happen. He said, nope. He says, somehow you're going to sense your brother or sister. Now, of course, people play doctor and they do things like that. And very often a brother, a young boy, will have some kind of unusual nervousness or high-level testosterone, and if there is no controls over him, he may force himself on his sister or stuff like that does take place. Allowing for all of that as the exception, Westermark said, we have a thing, and the way he says we have it, the aversion comes in the smell. Here we go back to the smell. That somehow you could smell when somebody is a brother or sister. Because here's the reason for it. We want to be able to mate with someone who has different genes than us because we want to be able to improve our resistance to disease. See, we're looking for our immune system to get better. So we mate with someone who's got an immune system that's somewhat similar but not identical. We just want it to be a little different. That's why we don't go picking anybody really, really opposite us. We pick somebody different than us, but somewhere around the same gene pool, usually, in our choices. So this mechanism is kind of an interesting thing, but then they took it a step further, and this one's really weird. What about people who don't have a sense of smell? Turned out, the people without a sense of smell were less able to distinguish brother and sister. Wow. So we are learning a lot. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So of the men who don't want sex, men always want sex, don't you think? No. I've heard the sexual partner of a man say, my mate doesn't want to have sex, what's wrong with him? Don't all men want sex all the time? Doesn't he want to have sex with somebody else and not me? So the common causes, again, medication, we talked about SSRIs. Now, hypertensives, blood pressure medication. You take blood pressure medication, you can be sure there's a good chance you're going to lose your sexual drive. Lack of sleep, of course, anybody. But a good night's sleep is wonderful for regenerating interest. Hormonal levels, the most single physiological stimulant for sexual desire in men and women is testosterone, believe it or not. You gotta have testosterone. Many men mistakenly sent to have a blood test for total testosterone with low libido is the issue. While that information may be interesting to know to have a full picture of man's hormonal levels, you gotta do a full picture. You gotta know the free testosterone level is much more relevant to how much sex he desires. Also, too much prolactin an SHBG, sex hormone binding globulin, can suppress sexual desire. How many men out there have tested themselves hormonally to see where they stand? Almost none of you. So when a hormonal reason is suspected, there are blood tests to have in order of importance: free testosterone, prolactin, SHBG, and total testosterone. Now, identity issues. When men feel uncertain about their role in the world, their desire for sex can dwindle. Depression can be linked to it, but it isn't always. Identity issues can crop up when he has issues at work or out of work, when he faces the death of an important family member, when he becomes disheartened about a formerly held strong belief. Now, this is a very unusual thing. Let's say you had a great belief in some person and you backed them up and they betray you. You know? Blah. Why would you lose your sexuality? Turn off to aspects of the sex. Some men will turn away from sex rather than have sex. The lack of fulfillment could be related to specific things that his partner does during sex or how he experiences his partner's body. He may feel criticized or treated unfairly. He may just seem like too much work to have sex, you know, and men eventually give up. Disagreements with your mate. I think that lack of sexual arousal with your mate is a form of hatred. Now, when I say hatred, that's pretty dramatic, but I think it is. I think when you don't know how to say no, and you can't say no to your partner, and you can't fight your partner anymore because she's just, he or she is too powerful for you, and they're just too strong, and what good does it do anyway? You go limp. Now, not only do you go limp, but let's say you go limp and you don't have any interest in anybody else sexually. What do? You go limp. You go fully limp. Then somebody suggests take a Prozac and you say, I want to stay limp. Because this way I'll stay faithful, this way I'll avoid trouble. So disagreements, what we do with therapy is when we have a couple who is having sexual difficulty, especially around arousal, we do a funny thing. This was taught to me by Al Peso, by the way. Pillow fights. We have pillow fights, and you have a pillow fight with your mate. Let me suggest this to you. Well, you don't hurt your mate, but you just have a pillow fight. Very often, just having a pillow fight and roaring like a lion at the same time generates your sexual interest again. Maybe you don't need therapy. Another reason that men very often lose any sexual interest and give off a sign that they're not interested in sex, and I've seen men who have consulted me with this, is about masturbation. Masturbation replaces sex. It just does, you know? It's a hot topic since the advent of the internet. It seems to some researchers in the field that men may not have sought out different visual stimulation, but for some couples it could be a dilemma. Many men just feel like less partnered sex feels like a blessing. Because it's so hard to have a relationship. It's so rough to go through all those things, you know? Well, if I have a sexual drive, boom, it's over. And when they go out, they seem that way. They seem like I have no interest. So it's an interesting thing. True monogamy could be just having a relationship with yourself, right? Monogamy, me, mono. Fear of intimacy, some men have relationships with their romantic partner that resemble that of their siblings or early childhood relationships, and they're just afraid to get any closer, so they just turn off. And of course, there's difficulty functioning sexually, which always can be another reason. Armed with accurate information, professional help, most of those reasons could be taken care of. When we come back from our break, I think we're going to be taking some of your calls today, but I want to talk to you about an aspect of this thing. By the way, speaking of testosterone, you know why people kiss? You ever wonder? We're going to have to do a show on kissing. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow. I think we have to do a program on kissing itself. But do you know the primary reason why men and women, why couples kiss before sex? Because during kissing, you exchange information. The primary information is about health. And you also exchange testosterone. the male testosterone and the female testosterone get activated by kissing. So kissing is, as we used to say when we were teenagers, the upper persuasion to the lower invasion. It actually works because it activates that testosterone. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, my friends, a little music and back to this fascinating subject.
You got to call some home.
Big cigars, darker man of bars. Mambo slow, Guantanamo. You were so glad, escaping Trinidad. Upside down in Kingston Town. Stole a car in the streets of Panama. Went too far in Bogota.
Now, can you imagine not being sexually interested in dancing to this? Impossible.
Take a break on the Titicaca Lake. Got some more in Ecuador. Stole a car in the streets of Panama. Went too far in Bogota.
And my friends, this is Armand DeMille back with you with the Positive Mind. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. If you've just tuned in to the wonderful music that we were playing that made you shake your hips a little bit, I don't think you'd shake your hips if you had complete loss in sexual interest. Maybe you would. I think that sex is a very important part of dance. But maybe not. I'd say just an interesting curiosity. I got to ask Marie. I have to do some research on that. We're talking about sexual disinterest. We're talking about the lack of sex drive and presentation of self. There are people I know who, without knowing it, they don't even know it. They do everything to turn off their partner they can. If their partner says to them, "Hey, I like seeing you naked," they put on clothing. Now, they may have a relationship with their partner where they're hoping to stir up the waters, but they do everything possible. If whatever one may compliment them about, they do the opposite. And they will often smell wrong. They will either have very bad breath, which is one of those turnoffs, because it's hard to kiss, it's hard to exchange the testosterone. You know, I mean, kissing somebody who does a lot of garlic, I guess, must be like kissing a pizza, you know, which could be a lot of fun, but I don't know how far you're going to get. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. So we're looking at sexual disinterest, sexual apathy, sexually avoidant personality disorder. And you may not think that you've got it, but there are a number of things. In another place you could hear it, right? It just said hear. You hear sex in people's voices. Don't I have a sexy voice? You know, I mean, sex is in the voice. If you talk to somebody and you listen to somebody talk, you can hear whether or not there is an invitation in their voice. And the invitation could be for friendliness, for contact, for closeness, or it's absent. Now I'll show you my sexually avoidant personality voice. Here he comes. You ready? Hi there. Hi, this is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind. Nah, it's probably still sexy. You know, okay. If you got it, you know, I mean, if it's there, it's there. Not that the interest is there, but the voice is there. But voice is a sexual thing. So listening to someone's voice, smell is important. Taste of someone is important. How do they taste? Did you ever taste yourself? You ever lick your hand and see what it tastes like? You know, taste. What do you taste like to the other person? Also important, but also what do you present? Now, there is a term where your sexually avoidant personality disorder gets so bad that you develop what's called sexual anorexia. Get this one. Anorexia. Anorexia is a term used to describe appetite or loss of appetite, right? Sexual anorexia is a term used to describe the loss of appetite for romantic sexual interaction. It could be a fear of intimacy. It could be anxiety surrounding sex. It could be a whole bunch of things. Sexual anorexia, it isn't a common term. Many people think that sexual anorexia means sex starvation or depriving oneself of pleasure. They link it to having a low sex drive. But neither assumption is necessarily correct. Sexual anorexia is a disorder that parallels sexual addiction and sexual compulsivity. It's a parallel to it. It seems to be based on sexual trauma. When the condition is not physical, when you don't have a hormonal imbalance, you can be sure that somewhere back there, there's going to be some part of you that was traumatized by about sex. It could be an obsessive state in which the physical, mental, and emotional task is to avoid sex dominating your life. Now, I know men who live in fear of their penises. You know, there was always a joke that I kind of appreciated, even though it's a joke. I'm going to tell it anyway. It's like, why do men give their names penises? Because they don't want somebody they don't know making 90% of their decisions. So it's to give the, it's because they made too many decisions that way. And many men easily could be enslaved by sex. Let's go back to the mice and the lizards and the guppies. You know, because they're enslaved by sex. The male becomes the sexual slave. The male becomes the guy. Once that turn on happens, they tell him, go out there and spill that seed. And men are slaves to sex. And they know it. And we're dumb. We're dumb because it runs so much of us. So what happens to us is we become aware of that drive. And some men just get such a fear of it that they are going to avoid it. And the way they avoid it is to get neutral and not interested at all. They find sex repulsive. So it's a reaction to having a sexual action. You know, instead of having the sexual compulsion, which is what nature built you for, and believe it or not, nature built you to be crazy. Nature was not so smart. Nature didn't say, oh, really choose well and choose a nice mate and then be monogamous. No, no, no. Nature told you, get out here, do everybody you can. They gave you a thing called prolactin that as soon as you're laying in bed with somebody and you have an orgasm, they give you this prolactic response which wants you to get up and go find another mate immediately. That's what the hormones tell you to do, even though you've learned that they're going to get angry if you do that, so you lay around anyway. But the male response is to have an aversion to sticking around. The symptoms of this sexual anorexia are as follows. a pattern of resistance to anything sexual. And that's anything. You won't even look at pictures. You won't look at sexual things. You continue that pattern of avoidance, even that you know it may be self-destructive, inasmuch as it prevents you from having a relationship. It prevents you from having a marriage. It prevents you from making contact. You go to great lengths to avoid sexual attention. What if you're a good-looking guy and people respond to you sexually, so you have to downplay yourself, right? Or a good-looking woman, and you want to downplay yourself, and you want to hide your breasts, and you want to hide your body. How far would you go? If you're sexually anorexic, you can actually distort your body. You see that very often in the rounded shoulders of women who are hiding their breasts behind their rounded shoulders, you know, trying to hold it back because they're trying to keep away the interest. It's like they're doing the guppy thing, you know, stay away from me. It's the resistance of a deeper, more painful life issues, and there's a lot of shame and self-loathing about your body. Obsessing about sex and how to avoid it is one of the things that could happen. Possible episodes of sexual binging or periods of sexual compulsivity, which get followed by this complete lack of interest. Both men and women can suffer from it, and most keep silent about it. They initially feel out of sorts and they don't speak openly about their apathy, for fear of being judged negatively in today's society. So they're afraid of being judged. But the negative associations about sexuality are usually formed by some kind of trauma. You know, it could be incest. It could be suggestibility. It could be the fear that your mother would give you, you know, when she would say, don't you dare, and watch out for your father, which is a very big one that happens in some societies. Watch out for your father, watch out for your uncle, watch out for your brother, because, you know, they're going to do things to you. And when the mother has great sexual inhibitions, and when the mother is competitive too with her daughters, she cautions the daughters beyond belief, and daughters become guppies. You know, they'll go to any danger to avoid, number one, betraying mom, right, and being in some way hurt by males. Now, of course, there are enough reasons to be wary about that. Sexual abuse by an older neighbor, a clergy, a teacher, anyone older imposes their adult sexuality on a child, can leave a child terrified, powerless, angry, and often blaming themselves, and therefore contributing even more to this feeling of sexual ambivalence or sexual avoidance. Children should not be exposed to any form of sexual contact for many reasons. They're not ready, physically or developmentally, to handle it. In adulthood, the trauma survivors of early childhood sexual abuse often become sexually anorexic, or, believe it or not, they become sexually addicted. Yep. That's where therapy comes in. That's where deep therapy comes in. That's where you get all the way down underneath that stuff. But neither, you know, the disorders, the anorexia or the addiction, they're not about sex. It arises from the initial loss of control over what happened to them as children. Adult sexuality imposed on a child impedes the child's own sexual development. So they either act out, like in sexual addiction, or they act in. They become sexually anorexic. This helps them feel like they're protecting themselves from further sexual betrayal, sexual insult, but even sexual betrayal is not the total betrayal. It's betrayal. You just don't trust anybody because they hurt you. Armand DeMille with you. Many sexual avoidant personalities come from rigid homes with very judgmental parents who condemn sex in negative terms. In many cases, one of the parents is punitive with their children on sexual issues, and you could be a watcher. You could be somebody who sees your brother get punished or sees your sister get punished, and you say, I'm not going to be bad like that. Children must measure up to their parents' expectations without being able to negotiate the rules. They are forced to withdraw inside themselves to find affection and love on their own. So what happens? And it's a sad story, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you. And I know it's supposed to be the positive mind, because if you're out there and you feel this way, I'd like you to reach out for help with this. Because even though you're a sexually avoidant personality, let's say even if it's postmenopausal, it's just there's a part of you that's just not in the world. Suddenly your world begins to feel unsafe. A child develops four core beliefs. Number one, I am bad and untrustworthy. Unworthy. Number two, no one would love me if they really knew me. Number three, the world is dangerous. And number four, if I depend on others, I'll get hurt. So this is why a lot of men and women drift into movements to keep themselves suppressed. And they join organizations that help them keep themselves suppressed. And so they find ways to make themselves. Hey, we have a couple of time. We do have time for one or two phone calls here today. 212-209-2900. I will take some calls today, and maybe I'll continue tomorrow with more calls. I'm sure you have a lot to say about this. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Sorry to have kept you waiting all this long. I wanted to make sure I covered most of the stuff. Maybe tomorrow is the show on kissing as well. But let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there. We're going to get you in there. Here they come.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes, I'd like to discuss this issue with you more at length, but I just called with something cute for you because I got it earlier when you were talking about the jeans. And I know you like music, so I figured I'd just call and sing Goodbye, Normal Jeans, though I never knew you would only have the grace to hold yourself.
Thank you very much.
I thought you might get a kick out of it.
I do. Thanks.
And your listeners.
And my listeners. And your name is?
Brad.
Brad, hi. Hey, Brad, did you ever feel sexual disinterest?
No.
No, you've kind of...
Armand, we had a little fire, and just the bathroom burned, and I got my girl out of the house, and we saved the house, and we saved ourselves, and we didn't even get injured Friday morning.
Wow.
So we're kind of sleeping at our daughter's because there's a lot of toxic stuff, but we don't have a spot to do our thing. And it's okay, but we have always just had this desire with each other, and it just doesn't go away. And besides sex, we like to sit next to each other. We have two couches, you know, a right angle in the den, and we watch TV often evenings. We sit right next to each other, and we look at each other and say, what are you doing all the way over there?
Gotcha.
There's a whole couch and a half away from us that we're not using.
Sounds beautiful. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks, Armand.
Thank you. You know what I heard one guy do? This is really, I think, probably the most creative I've ever seen. There was a man who was working with somebody, and they didn't want to have sex at work. But they wanted to be able to have sex during their lunchtime. You know what they did? They rented a safe deposit vault. They found that you could get a safety deposit box for something like $40 a year. And for $40 a year, what you do is you go down and you get your safety deposit box, and you're allowed to go into a room with your safety deposit box and stay in that room for up to 40 minutes before they knock on the door. Cheapest hotel in town. 212-209-2900. This is Armand. There's going to be a run on the bank now. Let's get another call. Hi, you there. Hello there. All right. You know, I snuck that up on my producer, the calls. Okay. So we were talking today about sexual anorexia, and we're talking about some of the problems that happen to people. Patrick Carnes is a guy who wrote about that. He writes that sexual anorexia, he found the association with addiction and compulsivity, and he kind of watched the parallel of it, saying to himself, this is not so far away, but I think it does go a little far away from it, because I believe that people get lost somewhere. I think somehow, very often, it's a choice between, will I be an adult or will I be a child? And some people out there just want to be a child. They just want to walk around wide-eyed. And it's funny thing about them, because you'll see that they wear, very often, kind of children's undergarments. You know, it's like there's a part of them that is saying, I prefer the child in me to the woman or the man in me. And so they move through life that way. And with that, they don't know it. They just don't know what they're putting out. They don't know what they're putting out. They don't know what they're putting out to people. They don't know the energy that they're putting out there, but it's a difficult struggle. It's a struggle because when they meet somebody, they have a mate, and here's what happens. They find a mate, and the mate says, everything is wonderful except this part of our relationship. He says, I just can't feel turned on to you. And so now, what does the partner do? If a woman says that to a man, for example, the man says, well, what's wrong? And she says, well, you don't smell good. You smell dirty. So he scrubs himself with Brillo, right, or something. He gets himself clean. He jumps in a vat of bleach, you know, or peroxide or something. And he just makes himself clean. He scrubs himself down. He says, how about now? And she says, well, you look overweight. So he goes on a diet. But he doesn't know. You see, she can't tell him what it is. Because something inside him is at that place. And it's not, and what we will do is we will make up reasons why. We'll make up excuses. So if the man says to the woman, you know, you don't excite me. And she says, well, what should I do? And he tells her what to do, and she'll wear these clothing, and she'll act this way. But it's not coming from the inside. So with all the behavior in the world, it just feels kind of foolish because you're not getting underneath that. There's a way of getting this to occur naturally, organically from the inside. And sometimes it takes facing the demons. You know?
You got a call.
Let's take one more call. We've got 212-209-2900. Just time for one call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello, yes, you're on the air.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I'm sorry, Armand. I was calling because I am in the situation exactly of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to lower the radio because I'm getting the feedback, so I don't get confused here. Okay. I have been with the same man for 14 years. We have not gotten married, and we are dealing. I love him. He loves me. And I'm a little bit sad because we deal with this issue where there's no sex. And he says, and I always say, when are we going to make love? And he's like, we will next week. And he'll always say, okay, fine, you know, we will. I am attracted to you because I said, is it me? You know, is it my body? Is it, you know, and you know, I'm nice looking and I've got a thin body. So, but I asked all those questions because I really wanted to find out, am I turning you off? And he says, no, it's none of that.
Of course, you know, now let me just, since I only have 1 minute, let me tell you this. This is where a couple has to find a negotiator in the middle. There's a woman named Ann Morganow who specializes in helping people find these feelings and unearth them. And what usually is, I could just tell you, he's angry. He's angry at you, and I know that he can't say he's angry because he may not even be aware that he's angry. And after this many years, you develop a whole bunch of angers that you don't even know you have because some of them are about nothing. This is where outside help really helps. Because intention is there and the love is there, but you need some help with it because you just can't do it on your own. Because you got to look from the outside. Do you know what I mean?
So where do we go? And what if he...
Send me an email and I will tell you, I'll direct you to the specialists, okay?
Okay, I have Armand, to get thank going. Thank you so very much.
And thank you, too. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We do have to be going. I will be back with you tomorrow. At 1 p.m., and if we get our research done, we're going to be doing a show about kissing, of all things. Back with you tomorrow, my friend. You can send an email, Armand@thepositivemind.com.